Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob. Talking.Golf is sponsored by Old Fashioned Golf. Our friends at Old Fashioned Golf are creating Wisconsin-inspired golf apparel right in Green Bay, Wisconsin. All of their gear is extremely comfortable, with one-of-a-kind designs that allow you to show your love for this great state both on and off the golf course. And take it from me, Rob Hernandez and Gary D'Amato, when we wear our old-fashioned golf polos on the golf course or out to dinner, no one has to ask us where we're from or where we like to play our golf. It's all about Wisconsin at Old Fashioned Golf, so check them out at oldfashionedgolf.com. And I'm with Gary D'Amato. I'm Rob Hernandez. And I tell you what, folks, if it's the beginning of the season or the end of the season, you can expect to find Gary D'Amato down at Spring Valley Golf Course near the state line. And yep. If you happen to follow Gary on social media, you saw that he was playing what might be his last round of the year in Wisconsin, and he did so with some pretty styling head covers, Mr. D'Amato. I saw some old-fashioned golf head covers in your bag.
Yeah, I got the driver head cover from Old Fashioned and the putter mallet cover. So, yeah. They look pretty good, you know, the red head covers with the little white Wisconsin silhouettes, and I have a yellow bag, so it's pretty colorful. It looks pretty sharp. They make great stuff.
Did they have to keep the clubs warm? It was pretty nice, it looked like, the day you golfed.
You know, it was 42 degrees, but it was sunny and it wasn't windy, so I had a couple layers on. It was fine, but it's funny. I pull into the parking lot at about 11:30, and I go to the golf shop, and the door's locked, and there's a sign on the door that says, "I'm out on the golf course, call this number." So I called the number, and it was David Wagner, the owner, and I said, "David, I'm here to play golf." And he said, "Really?" So I don't think he was expecting much play. But
anybody else out there?
There was a twosome and a threesome and me. So there were, I think he had six rounds that day. I don't think anyone came after I finished because it was, you know, it was late afternoon, getting dark and getting colder. So six rounds of golf, but you know, hey, we were out there. We were out there beating the ball around.
Well, we continue to update the course closings list for the season, and I don't know, Gary. To me, it's been a wild closure to the season here, because when the temperatures started going, you know, south, and when I talk about south, I mean towards freezing. A lot of courses were quick to close, and then the snow that kind of, you know, was only an inch or so, wasn't it? And a lot of courses, I think they felt that they had had enough of the season. Yet, and I think Milwaukee County is a great example. They closed Brown Deer, Dretzka right away, but the other courses, kind of in that middle tier, are closed. They were closed up until I think today, and now open through the weekend, and then they'll evaluate next week. And a lot of courses are reopening this weekend through Sunday, and then are just going to shut her down from Monday and beyond. I mean, to me, the forecast doesn't look bad. And when I talk like that from my days living in Wisconsin, you know, when we would play in, you know, 45 to 55 degree weather, maybe not when the wind's howling, but, you know, like you said, you had a pretty nice day, the day you golfed. And, but it's interesting how quickly some of these courses are closing. But then again, this is the first weekend in November.
Yeah, and actually for the next week, the forecast looks pretty good. I think toward the end of the week, it dipped down in the 40s again. But I think we're going to have like a 60-degree day in 4 or 5 days or so. I said in my post on X, on Twitter, that it might be my last round of the year. But now I'm having second thoughts, Rob, because we still have some nice days coming.
Well, I see 63 in the Milwaukee area on Monday, 51 on Wednesday, and then, you know, like you say, it's hovering between 45 and 50 through a week from Monday, and then you've got a couple of 50-degree days. I mean, Gary, I covered the state high school girls tournament in the first week of October or second week of October, and it was 53. I mean, we haven't dropped that much, so why are we folding up the tents?
Well, that's by design, Rob, because it seems like the weather is almost always bad for the state girls tournament. I don't know why. They can't get away. They can't get to back to back 70-degree days for that tournament, it seems like, anyway.
Yeah, no, you're right. And they were 1 week away from it. The sectionals were played, I think, in 80-degree weather. A number of the coaches said they actually had to make sure the girls were hydrated. And that's something we only think about down here in Arizona, I thought. But Yeah, you know, sometimes you don't miss by much, but when you miss, you miss. And, you know, we're into the football, high school football playoffs. We're transitioning from college football to college basketball starting up here, in less than a week. And of course the NBA is going. I think the other day when the World Series was going on down here, it was, what do they call it? Like the four corners of, professional sports, because everybody played on the same day. The NHL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, and the NFL. So, you know, it's that great time of year. And, you know, it's, I still think there's some rounds left.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to have to update my Twitter account, my X account, and post, when I play my next round, because I definitely plan on getting out there again, having looked at the forecast. Now, once it dips below 40 and kind of stays there, then my golf days are over. But you never know. Sometimes in December and January, you get that rare, you know, 45, 48 degree day. And if there's no snow on the ground, why not? Right.
Absolutely. Down here, meanwhile, in Arizona, we have a different phenomena, Gary. All the courses closed for overseeding so that the grass stays green during the winter. And, it's really funny. You know, you and I are on the Wisconsin golf group. I'm also on the Arizona golf group, and the concerns between the two different groups are so polar. That it's almost funny, because now down here, everybody's asking first who's in overseed and who's not, and, you know, or who's come out of the overseed, how the courses look, cause you're basically starting from scratch grass wise. And then the key is cart paths. Here in our community, one of the courses opened 2 weeks ago. So we're in the final few days of cart path only on the first course that was, shut down for overseed. The second one reopened this week. I just got done playing it. And, you know, you'd think cart path only, not a big deal. You know, you're golfers. I mean, we're supposed to be somewhat athletic, but I tell you what, Gary, until it's cart path only, you don't know how far it is from one side of a fairway to the other, especially if you've kind of sprayed the ball, maybe a little bit offline. There's a couple of pretty hardy walks here, but, you know, we all need our steps, don't we?
Yeah, you know, the trick is, Rob, to miss the ball on the side of the cart path, then you don't have to walk as far. But you're right. But, you know, I think sometimes cart path only, you walk almost as much cart path only as you would if you would sling your clubs over your shoulder, walk down the middle of every fairway. Not that that's where you hit it, of course, but.
Right. But, yeah. And you stumble on another point of, you know, why aren't more of us walking? And, it's because we're too, I think, set in our ways. There are a couple of lengthy walks between greens and tees, especially between nines on a couple of courses, but you know, you could hop on the back of a cart and you know, and pull it along, or, you know, like you say, I'd probably just carry mine over my shoulder and get to the, you know, cut those off. I mean, everyone does it anyway. There's courses in Wisconsin that people like to walk, and not every hole is, you know, is geared for walking, but then you just hop on the back of someone who might be riding, or take your time. I mean, my God, it's the 3rd of November. If I'm playing golf, if you're playing golf, are we really in a rush to finish?
No, we're in a rush to beat daylight. That's about it. But we're not in a rush to finish our rounds.
Absolutely, yeah. I teed off at 3 o'clock the other day, and 14 holes in. Cart path only, you know, when the snowbirds are gone, you can cruise around in 2.5-3 hours for 18 holes here, and then the snowbirds come back and it becomes cart path only. A 4-hour round feels like 6. So yeah. We got through 14 holes the other night, beautiful sunset. But you knew that it was time to stop, Gary. I hit an approach shot into a par 4. I could have sworn it barely crawled onto the front edge to a back pin. And I was, you know, kicking myself because I was going to have a long putt. Turns out my ball was on the back of the green about 8 feet from the hole. And I made the putt for birdie to finish. I said, I that was a walk off there. So I just stopped there and called it a day. But you're right. I mean, you know, that's the part about moving out west that was hard to stomach, is that, we don't get any more daylight for the good weather. I mean, you would think that with 80 degree weather, we're at 85 right now as we record the podcast, late in the afternoon on a Friday. And, you know, you would think that Mother Nature or, you know, that we would somehow be able to milk, you know, 12 hours of daylight or 14 hours. We're in the same boat as you, Gary. And we're even worse than you, because when I was back in June, I played till 9:30 one night up at Lake Arrowhead. You can't play past 8 o'clock here any time of the year.
Well, and now daylight savings comes this weekend, Rob. Saturday to Sunday, we lose that hour. So, starting next week now, you know, it gets dark at, I don't know, 4:30. So if you don't tee off by 1 o'clock, say, you have no chance really to play 18 holes.
Well, first world problems, and I get chided quite a bit, especially when I get in those little runs where I'm playing a lot of golf. People ask me, do I ever work? And so, you know, I'm sure you get that once in a while too. You got the greatest job in the world, Gary. You're always golfing.
Yeah, right.
Gary D'Amato is always golfing, folks. If you haven't read our site this week, you know that's not true. And I tell you what, I walked into our pro shop in Arizona, Gary D'Amato, yesterday. And the woman behind the counter, Liz, who's from Wisconsin, comes up to me and goes, Rob, I read the story about Randy Ward, but you tell Gary that was a great piece. It's a great piece. And so even down here, the Gary D'Amato fan club, alive and well. But you know what? Truly, it was the Randy Warbick fan club. We write about a lot of people. There's not a nicer guy than Randy Warbick. And I think that was supported here by all the feedback we're seeing on social media. And just, you know, the way that he has contributed to golf in Wisconsin, first as a player, obviously the son of a legendary club pro, and then as a player, solid amateur career, but in what he's giving back. And again, reading your story, Gary, I'm taken back to the state, junior girls championship at Hartford Golf Club. And, I was there two of the 3 days, and Randy was starting on one of the holes. And the last day, you know, part of that was in the rain. And, you know, I don't know if the young ladies that come up to the tent that understand who Randy Warbick is. And I think there was actually one response on one of our Facebook posts or shares of the story that said, I had no idea I was in the presence of a legend, you know, when I saw you all summer. And, but that's Randy Warbick. He kind of, you know, he doesn't want to be known like that, but, I thought your story did a wonderful job in bringing out who he is because he's really provided so much to golf in Wisconsin.
Yeah, he really has, you know, volunteering 100 days per summer at golf tournaments, as kind of a jack of all trades volunteer. He'll do anything it takes to help the tournament run smoothly for the WSGA and for the other state organizations. We see him everywhere. And you're right, Rob, you know, he's 72 years old. He's got some problems with his hands. He has sort of a rare form of osteoarthritis in his hands. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't play a ton of golf anymore. But when he plays, you know, in some of the senior events, he's still, really competitive. He shot 70, 76. So he beat his age in the first round in the state, senior amateur. Now, you know, as the Legends Division guy, he plays from an up tee, but still to shoot 70 anywhere is pretty darn good. And you're right. He did have a great playing career when he was younger. You know, he played at Texas with, Ben Crenshaw and Tom Kite and won a bunch of stuff from the state, never won a state am or a state open, but came very close in both, and now he gives back to the game. So I'm glad I was able to do that one, and I have fun doing those legend stories because you're right, Rob, a lot of the young people really don't know what these older gentlemen and ladies accomplished when they played.
Well, and I think, you know, you and I both go back to, I mean, I'll never forget Lou Warbick, Randy's dad. I mean,
yeah,
you know, he was part of a club pro era of characters. I kind of, you know, look at, you know, Lou Warbick and Carl Yunus and Steve Bull, Well De La Torre. Now, some of those guys weren't necessarily as constantly, you know, trying to crack jokes like maybe a Lou Warbick and a Carl Yunus were, but, you know, they all got along, it seemingly so well. They were big names in their community because the club pro, you know, usually was in a position for a long, long time and had taught, you know, generations of golfers how to play golf. We don't quite see that anymore. But, you know, I remember, you know, Lou was, you know, around and then watching Randy. And I thought, well, why doesn't Randy be a club pro? And obviously Randy's, you know, been successful in his path and has been a lifelong amateur. And but, you know, I think Randy also got to see what being a club pro was all about through his dad. And it had its moments, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, Rob, because I think back in the 50s and 60s when Randy was a kid and his dad, Lou, was a prominent club pro, before that he had played on the PGA Tour. And all those guys that you mentioned, you know, Manuel De La Torre, Gordy Watson, Russ Tuveson, Lou Warbick, those guys all played on the PGA Tour. And that's how you really got the plum private club jobs in America and in Wisconsin was – you come off the PGA Tour and you had that playing resume that was so coveted by the private clubs and the best clubs in America. And you don't see that as much anymore because very few club professionals, you know, actually play on the PGA Tour and then go back to a club job. But that's the way it was back then. If you were a good PGA Tour player, you got the plum jobs in the private clubs.
I kind of feel like it took a while for that mentality to die, though, because I know with a number of the club jobs that came open in the Madison area while I was covering golf there, I always found it strange that they would look far away for a new head pro. And it was always somebody who knew someone because this guy was something. And,
yeah,
you know, and a lot of the pros that came into our area were accomplished players. Makes you wonder, you know, if I think though it went away from, you know, you wanted someone who was very good as a player so you could go out and really be impressed by them on a, like in a playing lesson or on men's night or whatever it might be. But you didn't want to be too good a player because then they'd want to play all the time. So I think we kind of morphed into that balance and now it's kind of a little bit of both. And, it seems like, especially now the PGA pro is very much a businessman.
Yeah. And because those guys played so well in tournaments, their names were known statewide.
Yeah.
And you still have some of that today. Jim Schumann, I think a lot of people know who Shu is, and Ryan Helman and guys, Eddie Taurasi, guys like that who were very successful as club pros, playing club pros. But back then, those guys' names, Manuel De La Torre and all those guys we mentioned, their names were in headlines in the sports sections throughout the summer because of how good they played in state opens and in other events and national events. So you're right. Those guys were revered and they had reputations that, you know, went far and wide and far from their home clubs.
And I think that's how it was cool when Michael Crawley played so well at the State Open. It wasn't a throwback because, you know, when we first started covering State Opens, the club pros and the top amateurs, the young golfers all played about the same amount of golf. And that's changed dramatically. The pros will play their Monday events, but those are, you know, those are formatted events, usually pro-ams and against the same people all the time. And I'm not sure it quite prepares them for it, but, you know, clearly, you know, guys like Michael Crawley, Mick Smith, Brad Lanning, Craig Cernajewski, you know, there's a number of them that have, really done quite well. But, you know, I don't think they're quite as, on the tips of our tongue when it comes to favorites for those State Open type events, as they were, you know, as club pros were back in the Stricker era when, you know, Steve won his first, State Open. It was against the guy Jim Wall in a playoff at, Westmore where, you know, Jim, I think Jim had turned pro by that point and, was as assistant at Yahara Hills and then wound up with a long career out in the New York section, the metropolitan section. And, so it was, you know, it's changed a lot, but, it was fun to read your story about Randy and just some of the things he learned watching his dad from, you know, being Ray Nitschke's playing partner for his first round of golf at Branch River Country Club. Would have loved to be a fly on the wall for that one. I can remember when Ray Nitschke walked the fairways at Oneida Golf and Riding the year Jerry Kelly won the State Open up there. And, that was late in life. And I think Ray might have been a little bit hard of hearing because he would always talk loud, but, I don't think Jerry Kelly would have traded that for anything. And then, you know, I thought the time that he interrupted Ben Hogan on the range when, his dad had, qualified for the 1964 PGA was a classic story too. I can't imagine seeing a legend, you know, nowadays there isn't anybody in the world of golf that we don't know through TV, but I feel like I don't know Ben Hogan because I've never really watched any interviews with him. I've, you know, very seldom see, you know, clips. There aren't many clips of him. And, and for him to have that opportunity, even though it was kind of one of those, you know, oh my God, Randy, what are you doing? Cause nobody approaches Ben Hogan. I thought that was a great story.
Yeah. He was only 13 years old. And you're right. There was definitely a mystique around, Ben Hogan and the great athletes of the time because the people weren't exposed to them on TV and social media and, you know, read about them in newspapers and saw their scores and, heard stories about how great they were, but no one bothered Ben Hogan when he was practicing and, Randy didn't know. I mean, he was 13-year-old kid. There's his idol. He went up and said, "Mr. Hogan, I'd like to shake your hand." And Ben treated him great. He said his dad admonished him, but Hogan said, no, that's okay. And they chatted for a few minutes and, boy, what an opportunity to meet your idol like that. That must have been something else.
I had no idea that Randy Warbeck was a runner-up at the WIA State Championship, and I had no idea he went to Brookfield Central. That's pretty cool. And then, who is it? So he wound up going to Texas Tech.
Yeah, he went to UWM for 1 year, played on their golf team when UWM had a men's golf team. Then he went to Texas Tech, and he said the one semester I was there, the weather was horrible. We had a huge snowstorm in the late fall, early winter, and then we had a couple sandstorms, and he said, I got to get out of here. This is worse than Wisconsin. So he looked around, and, you know, Texas at the time, University of Texas, had that great team with Crenshaw and Kite and a couple other players that were really good. And, they wound up winning back-to-back NCAA championships. But he talked to the coach and said, hey, can I try walking on the team? And the coach said, if you can beat some of our scholarship players, you've got a place on the team. And he went out and did it in 8-round team qualifying. Although he said Crenshaw and Kite were about 20 strokes ahead of the third place guy. They were pretty good.
Yeah. And he finished sixth. And that's been we follow Randy on social media, and Randy's so good about taking pictures of the places he is now in his volunteer role with the WSGA.
Yeah.
So we always get a taste of what the weather's like for these tournaments, because we see whether it's cloudy, stormy, rain delays, whatever. But I also see a lot of the reunions they have with Crenshaw and Kite and the Texas team. And I had no idea how he got there, and what a great story. And then, you know, to build off of that, I mean, before you could even play against the scholarship guys, I see they actually had a qualifier for the university, which to me would be, I'd love to see, you know, Steve Bailey and Mike Wilson do that at UW, because, you know, having, you know, there's so many kids on campus that are, you know, former great high school golfers. Yeah, I'm sure they may or may not even, you know, think about wanting to play at the, you know, college level. But he had to take on 150 kids, and he finished second out of that. And I mean, and that's Texas. I mean, everybody plays golf in Texas.
Yeah. You know, Jack Anderson is a good example of a guy at the University of Wisconsin who could probably make the golf team if he really wanted to. He plays club golf, I believe, there.
Yeah.
But you're right. Randy told me a great story that I couldn't get into the story, Rob, about how good Ben Crenshaw was. Randy said he was as long and straight as a driver as you've ever seen when he was in college.
Yeah.
He said he was really long and he hit every fairway. And of course, we remember Ben, after he turned pro, he started struggling with the driver and he became crooked and short, you know, midway through his career and later in his career. Which why winning the 95 Masters was like a shot out of the blue. But Randy said he came back for one of their reunions and everyone's standing around and Ben hits a big duck hook on the first day and all the players started laughing because they thought he did it on purpose, because Randy said we'd never seen him hit a shot like that in college.
Wow.
So that's the kind of stuff you hear that I wish you could get those stories into the main story. But he told some good stories about his time at Texas, that's for sure.
Well, you covered Crenshaw and Kite during all your times at the Masters and other major championships. To me, Randy Warbeck is very much like a Ben Crenshaw, both in terms, I mean, I think basically in terms of personality. And, you know, we talk about gentle Ben, and I mean, Randy's as gentle a man as you'd ever want to meet. But yet exudes a great deal of class. He's a presence when he's at these events, even though, you know, again, I'm not sure a lot of people understand, you know, his background.
Yeah, absolutely. He is really very, very highly respected throughout the state for the role that he plays with the WSGA, you know, as a past president. And he's volunteered in other organizations, the Milwaukee District Golf Association, NUGA, Northeastern Wisconsin Golf Association. And he's had roles in all of those organizations, helping to run them and helping to run tournaments. You know, perfect gentleman. I mean, when you think of a gentleman amateur golfer, you think of a guy like Randy Warbeck.
And, you know, again, he's seen very, you know, all the different eras of golf that we've covered, and then some. And, you know, going back to, I mean, you know, he was, you know, he's kind of, you know, short in stature, but, you know, would tee it up against the giants of the game that we've covered from the, you know, the Steve Stricker, you know, JP Hayes, Skip Kendall era not too long ago as far as the total amateur level. Now he's, you know, continuing to compete against the guys, his age. which is a very good group. I mean, that's a, I don't know if there's a more active senior group than what we've got in Wisconsin. So it takes a lot for him to even, you know, continue to dominate in that Legends division. I'm glad they created the Legends division. I joked with someone the other day that, who's turning 70, you know, that he, you know, you go from that senior division to the super senior, you know, if you hang around to your 80 or whatever it is to be the Legends, you know, you've got a division there. And I'm glad because these are the people who built the game, you know, let them continue to compete in their, you know, in their, you know, kind of sphere and pay honor to these people that way.
Yeah, absolutely, Robbie. I mean, you move those guys up one tee from where the seniors are playing and the super, to go up to one tee for the super seniors and the Legends, and they are every bit as competitive. I mean, they shoot the same scores as guys like, you know, Jim Ewing and Ed Zerbic and some of the better, the really fine senior amateurs we have in our state. These super seniors and Legends from another tee up shoot the same scores.
I just realized the seniors are 50 and up, the super seniors are 60 and up, and the Legends are 70 and up. I'm afraid because I'm getting close to the super senior.
I'm getting close to the Legends. Not that I am one.
Oh my. Well, that's a great, I mean, again, a great story. And everyone's really taken to the Legends of Golf series that Gary does and will continue to do, especially here through the winter. And, we have time to, you know, sit down with some of these great individuals and, you know, some of them are, you know, people that, you know, come into play when we're talking about, the Wisconsin Golf Hall of Fame, you know, that the names come up in our conversations there. Since we did our last podcast, Gary, too, I think, you had a chance to, watch the induction ceremony for the latest two inductees into the Wisconsin Golf Hall of Fame, John Turcotte and the late Jim Lemon. And, it seemed like a very, I think a poignant ceremony. These are two guys that were good friends growing up at Nakoma Golf Club in Madison, went on to play at the University of Wisconsin, were somewhat rivals in high school. They didn't quite overlap, at the same time, but they parts of their careers did. They dominated, John Turcotte at Middleton and, Jim Lemon, probably the last great Madison West teams that we saw, back in their era. What was the night like at Maple Bluff for that ceremony? And, what did you take away from, latest two inductees into the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, it was really a special night at Maple Bluff. You know, some tears throughout the night because we've lost Jim Lemon, and some of the stories that people told about Jim, and then, you know, a lot of laughter. Turcotte holds up, you know, Gene Haas, does a portrait, a caricature of everyone who goes in the Hall of Fame, and they get presented at the dinner. And Turcotte gets up there and he looks at his picture and he holds it up. He goes, "Gene, I don't have this many chins."
Oh,
but, but you know, Dennis Tiziani presented Jim Lemon, told some great stories about, you know, working with a young Jim when he got to Wisconsin and how he recruited him. And then, Bob Grigorski presented Turcotte and told some equally hilarious stories. And then Turcotte told a great story of fishing on the seventh hole at TPC Tampa Bay, during a practice round for a tournament. He and Jim Lemon decided to go fishing, and Turcotte throws his lure out there. It gets stuck on the lily pad and he jerks it back and the treble hook buries in his stomach. Actually, he said all three barbs buried in his stomach. And Jim Lemon just happened to have a wire cutters in his golf bag. And Turcotte goes, "Who carries wire cutters in their golf bag?" But he said, "There I am lifting my shirt up and Jim's on his knees cutting the slur out and people are walking past." He said it was not a pretty sight.
Well, that's, you know, hilarious because those two guys, you know, they kind of entered the professional golf realm when things really started getting competitive. I'm not saying it wasn't when Steve Stricker, and JP and Skip and Jerry, you know, went up the ranks because they had to work hard to get to where they were at. But, you think about it, you know, once the PGA Tour created the Ben Hogan Tour, and then started the, you know, basically the graduation, concept of, you know, their developmental tours. Everybody started playing them because they knew there was a path there. They felt that there was a way to somewhat justify, you know, spending money because you're making, you know, quantifiable money versus some of the money you were making on the mini tours like the Hooters Tour. And they both had their moments. I mean, Turcotte played a year on the PGA Tour. Jim Lemon, very successful on the Canadian tour, just couldn't quite get over that hump, could they?
No, they, Turcotte came very close. You know, he nearly won on the Corn Ferry Tour, Robbie. I think he finished second in the Oregon Classic in maybe 15 years ago. I'm not sure if it was a playoff or if he lost like by a shot, but you know, he wins that tournament and who knows how the doors open. And like Bob Gregorski said in his, when he was presented, John, he said he came within an inch of, you know, playing on the PGA Tour. And every year during the Honda Classic, when John is caddying for someone on the PGA Tour, he stays with Bob for that week because Bob has a winter home down in Florida near the Honda Classic site and they play golf and, Bob said he can really still play. John's a great player, always has been, a hard worker. And Bob told one quick story that I'll tell here, Robbie. He said, I followed him. John was caddying in the Honda Classic for Spencer Levine. Mm-hmm. And Bob said, I go out to, and I'm walking with them and I'm following them. And he said, Spencer was just a complete jerk. Every shot he missed, it was John's fault. He was berating John, yelling at John. And he said, John was perfectly stoic. And Bob said, I actually left the course midway through the round because I couldn't handle it anymore, how he was treating John. And so John gets back to the house later in the day and Bob said, John, how do you put up with that? Getting yelled at on every time he made a mistake, he was just cussing you out. And John said, you know, I'm a professional caddy. There's other players looking at me and they're watching to see how I handle that stuff. And you know, if I'm, you know, should I lose my job or should I have a chance to get another bag? All the players know that, you know, that I can handle that situation, that I'm not going to blow my top and walk off the course. And so Bob said, you know, I learned a lot from that conversation from John. He's as professional a caddy as he was a player.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and it was always hard to kind of, you know, read John Turcotte on the golf course. I mean, he would, you know, kind of roll his eyes when, you know, shots weren't going well, but, you know, he never got too animated that way. And, you know, Jim Lemon, on the other hand, you know, was, you know, very, to me, always in game face mode, you know, was very, you know, kind of, stern looking. And, you know, I'm not sure either one smiled a ton on the golf course, but, you know, things were going well for John, you know, he'd have that, you know, kind of that, mischievous grin going that, you know, he would steal a shot here or a shot there. The caddy part of John Turcotte has been fascinating for me to follow, in part because I've seen him in action. I thought that, you know, maybe his best bag was, you know, the partnership with Sepp Straka. Saw him a couple of years ago at the Farmers Insurance and Sepp liked what John did. And John, you know, really felt that we'd see out of Sepp what now we're seeing, you know, him making the Ryder Cup team last year, winning a couple times. And I think Sepp went back and I think his brother is on the bag now, or at least he was for a while. And, you know, these relationships come and go. They're difficult. They're awkward. I mean, you know, the outside world thinks, how can you screw up being a caddy? And I think that story, you know, is symbolic of, you know, when things don't go well, blame is assigned. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, if the player is above the caddy, And as I think a good person, they will absorb as much of that as the caddy will. But, you know, when you're pointing fingers at your caddy, I mean, it's like, you know, asking yourself, you know, Gary D'Amato, why can't I putt? You know, if it's the putter and how much it's the operator error. I mean, I think in that case, there's probably a little bit of both. I mean, you know, if you and I aren't putting well, we'd like to think there's a putter out there that'll solve that. But ultimately it lies with us, but it is a relationship. It's the same with caddies and players. And at the PGA Tour level, I mean, these guys are fighting for their careers, and now it's even more difficult with the elevated events and the limited number of times that you can, you know, play in them.
Yeah, I think a lot of players, Rob, have fragile, you know, confidence or self-esteem or however you want to put it, and when they make mistakes, they never want to admit that it's their fault, right? They never want to admit that it's always the wind blew their ball off course or, mm-hmm. you know, they had a terrible lie, or it was the caddy's fault. He gave me a bad yardage. They have like a built-in mechanism where they don't want to say, you know, I screwed up. I hit a bad shot there. Now, some pros, of course, do, but there are a lot of them who just refuse to admit that they do anything wrong. And it sounds like Spencer Levine might be that kind of guy. John's not on his bag anymore. I think he's kind of looking for a bag right now, Robin. I hope he winds up with someone good who treats him right and who helps John make a lot of money. That'd be great.
Yeah. You know, we saw Bill Heim, a three-time state champion out of Green Bay. on the bag of Rich Beam, up at, Hazeltine, you know, when he won his major. And, you know, I think for the amount of time that John has put into this, it'd be great to see. And I think, as far as Jim Lemon goes, I think one of the greatest tributes to Jim and the kind of golfer that he was his ability once he went into the, you know, financial world. And then golf wasn't the thing. That's when he won his state open. And, and I think it was a message to Jim Lemon that maybe I grinded too hard as a professional golfer if I had let it come to me. But at the same time, by that point, you know, I'm not sure if he was married to Kate yet, but, Kate, the former Kate Weirwill, who was a state champion in her own right, in high school. You know, I think at that point, you know, family became very important. I know with his parents, Elmer and Betty, you mentioned in the story, Betty Lemon, was, you know, the architect of the junior program at Nakoma Golf Club for both John Turcotte and Jim Lemon, among many, many others. And Elmer, you know, Jim's dad was a guy who held his, and like Jack Turcotte, I mean, you know, and two very different father-son relationships there, because Jim was very much like Elmer, but I think John was, Turcotte was very much his own person. To me, a little bit different than Jack, although, who knows what Jack was like as a young teenager, making that transition from high school to college. But my point is that Jack would, you know, hold John accountable too. And I think they both come from great families. And now, you know, like I said, Jim Lemon married a former state champion, in Kate Weirwill, and they have a young son who, I'm sure someday, you know, we might be writing about, you know, because I've seen pictures of him, you know, out golfing here and there. And then, you know, John Turcotte married the former, I believe it's Christy Miller, and, Monroe Miller, her dad, time, superintendent at Blackhawk Country Club, who, you know, was to turf grass and golf course maintenance in Wisconsin, a legendary figure and a guy whose impact he was always willing to help people and probably in retirement still is, those families, it's almost like a wonderful life for two guys who are now in the Hall of Fame, that they've been surrounded by a great support network of people who really respect the game of golf.
Yeah. And to get back to Jim for a second, he was a very smart guy, 2-time All-American at Wisconsin, academic All-American, I should say. And he was on the player. He was a player director on the Canadian tour when it sort of got absorbed by the PGA tour. And he helped. He was in the group of people who helped the Canadian tour merge into the PGA tour to avoid becoming insolvent. He had a big role in that. And that's the thing that that stood out, that people talked about how proud he was of that, of being able to being one of the architects of that that merger. So. It's funny. I met Monroe Miller I'd never met Monroe Miller.
Really?
Rob, I met him finally at the dinner. Yeah. We talked for a little bit and, I told him how impressed I was with his career and everything. As you mentioned, you know, the king of turf grass in Wisconsin. And, one funny thing at the end of the night, I shook John Turcotte's hand, congratulated him. He said, you wrote some good stories. They could have been really raggedy, but they weren't. So from John Turcotte, I think that's a big compliment.
That is the ultimate compliment. And, you know, you always, you know, yeah, because, you know, JT, I remember at, the Genesis Invitational, he was on the bag of John Ha, and that was another relationship. I didn't, you know, I'm not sure how much, English I think John spoke at that time. I didn't seem like, I didn't know, and it just seemed like a weird relationship. But, you know, I asked John, you know, how are things going? And did a short interview, but, you know, half of it, you can't use that. You can't use that. You can't use
right.
that. You know,
right.
You're very candid, but, you know, most of it is stuff that, you know, I mean, and it wasn't anything derogatory. It wasn't anything, but, you know, there's a fine line, and, you know, even a guy like John Turcotte knows, you know, and he's in a profession where you walk on a tightrope day in and day out, and the caddy is never the star of the show. We've seen that with, Tiger Woods and his caddies. I think those guys very deserving of the Wisconsin Golf Hall of Fame, and I'm glad the ceremony was the proper salute for those two gentlemen. Again, Talking Dot Golf here. We are sponsored by Old Fashioned Golf. old-fashioned golf, creating Wisconsin-inspired golf apparel right in Green Bay, Wisconsin. All their gear extremely comfortable with one-of-a-kind designs that allow you to show your love for the great state both on and off the golf course. Old-fashioned golf has great logoed items, polos, pullovers, head covers like Gary talked about earlier, ball markers, just about anything that you can use on the golf course that might need a Wisconsin logo on it. They've got it at Old Fashioned Golf, and you can see their entire inventory of everything and the creativity they put in sharing the logos and iconic framework of the state of Wisconsin in their merchandise. You can see all that at oldfashionedgolf.com. We encourage you to check that out. Wisconsin well represented in the PGA Tour Champions Playoffs, the Charles Schwab Cup Playoffs. And this week, the second leg of that, the TimberTech Championship down in Boca Raton, Florida. After one round, Jerry Kelly tied for 20th with a 71. Mario Tiziani, a real tough day today, a 5-over par 76. But Gary D'Amato, he was 6-over at the turn and then made 8 straight pars before a birdie at 18 to shoot 76. I you know, it was a struggle 2 weeks ago at the Dominion Energy for Mario. It kind of tells me that maybe Mario really poured so much into getting in that top 54 to get exempt status for next year that this is kind of, you know, maybe a little bit too much for him, or tough to kind of recuperate and you know, sort of gather himself for the next phase. Maybe that'll come next year. But, you know, Jerry hanging right in there. He's still in the top 10. He's eighth coming into the week. If he T20 would drop him to 10th, in the projected Charles Schwab Cup standings, but no one will catch Steve Stricker. He clinched it after the event 2 weeks ago when Stephen Elker didn't win, and someone had to win out to be able to catch him. And we've got a champion, and it looks like he'll come to Phoenix next week to claim his title.
And you've got a credential for that? You'll be covering that, Rob?
Gary, you've got a credential for it, and Jim Kelsch. You know, we talked about maybe having you guys come down and triple team this thing, but it didn't quite work out.
Yeah.
If you know, if you if somebody's got a suitcase big enough, you're more than welcome to come down here and join the fun. But yeah, we got a credential. I was at Media Day last week. Had a chance to talk to Stephen Elker. We posted a story today.
Yeah.
Stephen Elker was the Schwab Cup champion last year, and it was a pretty good battle between him and Padraig Harrington through the Charles Schwab Cup Championship. And then Steve Stricker, Jerry Kelly finished 3 and 4. But, you know, he just marvels at what Steve was able to do, putting it away this early. And in my research, Gary, it's only happened one other time that someone has buried the competition and been able to walk away with the title before the final event. And I think it was Bernhard Langer. And that was a number of years ago. Well, it was, what was it, to 2014, which is starting to get to be it's almost 10 years now. Where he closed out Colin Montgomery after the next to last event. Now, in 2016? It was a couple of years ago. Langer had won 7 times, and then they reset the points for the final event, and Kevin Sutherland,
yeah, won,
and it was his first victory, and they stopped doing that right away after that time. I remember that being, it was I think the first year we were living down here in Arizona, a little bit controversial. And there's no good way to do it, Gary, to keep the intrigue and the drama when you get a guy that has the year like Steve Stricker had, you know, all the way down to the final event. And I don't think it's fair to take – I mean, Bernhard Langer should have won the Schwab Cup overall title that year. And
yeah, did,
and I think that was, you know, an injustice that maybe someday will be rectified. But, you know, I think, you know, we salute Steve for having a dominant year. There's a good battle going on for second place. And you know, there's still, you know, 2 more tournaments to win here this week and next week at the Schwab Cup Championship.
Well, yeah, I mean, Steve's had one of those historic years, and you can't, how do you fix this so that it doesn't happen again? I mean, I don't know if you can, Rob, because if a guy is clearly, demonstrably that much better than everyone else on the tour for months on end, how do you prevent him from wrapping it up early? It's pretty hard to do. I think this is a much better scenario than the one you talked about where, you know, Bernhard Langer went 7 times and was denied the Charles Schwab Cup because of the way the point system worked at the time. I think the way it works now is preferable to that, certainly.
I agree. Because, you know, when a guy wins six times, like Steve Stricker has, the only other guy who's won more than two times is Stephen Ames, and he's won four. But, you know, they've been regular events, no majors. So he's actually a little bit back in the Schwab Cup standing. So, and there's two guys like Jerry Kelly and Miguel Angel Jimenez who haven't won this year, who could win this week or next and only have one win. And if they would have, and if the win came next week, it's a good chance that, you know, that at least in Jerry's case, because he was eighth coming into this week, where he could have leaped up there and, you know, under that, that 1 year scenario. So I think this is a pretty fair way to do it. And, you know, and just, you know, and celebrate Steve Stricker. It, you know, it's getting him to come to Phoenix for the first time next week. And then, you know, I think he'll like the course, whether he'll win or not, I don't know. But, you know, obviously there'll be a tournament champion and the, and Steve with the overall champion. And then the next phase is what happens in 2024. I had a chance to ask Stephen Elker, you know, after on the heels of Doug Ferguson's story, kind of suggesting that he might play more on the PGA Tour. Well, he can't play less because he hasn't played since 2021. So he's going to play more because he's in there, with the exemptions into this, PGA Championship and the Players Championship for winning the Senior Tour equivalents. But, it's likely, as Steve told Doug Ferguson, that he will ask for an exemption in the Sony Open in Hawaii. And then I looked at the schedule, Gary. There aren't a whole lot of tournaments that fit opposite, you know, when the Senior Tour major season starts, there's a number of tournaments that Steve could play in. I think the one in Detroit is one of them, on the regular tour that, that are not elevated events. If Steve is to play more on the PGA Tour next year, the plan then would have to be you've got to earn enough money to get into the, you know, the criteria for the elevated events. That's kind of what the carrot is. Or you're content trying to be the oldest winner, presumably, in a long, long time. You know, probably what Phil Mickelson, I think, won, you know, before he went to live. So that's probably the guy you're chasing that record. And Steve, obviously, older than Phil. You know, John Deere Classic, I think, is one that would fit the 3M Open up in Minneapolis, or 3M Championship. I'm not sure what they're calling it now, but, you know, might fit. And, but there aren't a whole lot of others that, you know, I'm not sure that, Torrey Pines necessarily is a course that, or courses that Steve would like. It's not an elevated, it is an elevated event, I think. Phoenix is one that, is not this year. And, he played very well there a couple years ago, even though, you know, as Doug Ferguson pointed out in his story, it's not a course that necessarily suits his game. But if there's courses out there that, aren't that long, he's straight enough to, and long enough, but not as long as today's golfer, he could do quite well next year. It'll be interesting, to say the least.
And then he's got to take into account how much does he want to play. I mean, if he's going to play, you know, four or five or six events on the PGA Tour, I don't think we're going to see him in 15 or 16 Champions Tour events either. So he's going to walk that fine line. You know, Steve has never been one to overextend himself and play dozens of tournaments, as, you know, Jerry Kelly, to his credit, has always played a lot of tournaments, you know, going back to when he first got on the PGA Tour. Sometimes he'd play 32 or 33 tournaments in a year. And Steve was always around the 18, 19, 20 mark. So it's, Steve's going to, I'm sure, consider that when he builds his schedule for next year.
Well, and he's got six titles to defend on the PGA Tour Champions, including the one that he hosts in Madison at the American Family Insurance Championship. So you know that the schedule will be presumably built around there.
Yeah.
US Senior Open was one that he came close in, and obviously he'll play that. He played 16 times. Stephen Elker's only played 18 times, but we remember Stephen Elker's caddy died early in the year, and I think there was a bit of a recovery process from that. Bernhard Lange has been the Iron Man. Jerry Kelly's been the Iron Man with 22 starts. Alex Chaika, actually, and Y.E. Yang have 25. So, I mean, that's a pretty, you know, there's nine events there he didn't play. So there's, you know, I think when the Senior Tour goes over to, Saudi Arabia for early in the season, there's an opportunity if he were to get an exemption into the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. I think that might be the same time, but that's also now an elevated event. So I don't know. And there are exemption, you know, possibilities for that, but, you know, I don't see, if I'm an elevated event on the PGA Tour, I don't think I'm going backwards in time to give my exemptions out. Are you, Gary?
No, no. And when you look at it, as you pointed out, six and possibly seven, if he wins next week, tournaments to defend titles. And then you throw in the one major, the US Senior Open that he didn't win. And then you talk about a couple of the events that he's already in on the PGA Tour. All of a sudden you're up to a dozen tournaments. So he's only going to play four or five more times beyond those.
And it'll be interesting to see how they manage, you know, Bobby not getting through to the second stage. I'm not sure, you know, how that's going to impact her Symetra Tour eligibility for next year and the amount of times that she can play. She may have to maybe, you know, drop to the APT Tour and try to get into the Epson Tour that way. I'm sorry, yeah, Epson Tour. I think I called it Symetra. And then let's not forget, you know, this time a year from now, youngest daughter Izzy will be in college starting her career at the University of Wisconsin. And I'm guessing that Steve and Nikki will want to travel and see some of those events as well. You know, 4 years goes by fast. I have a feeling Izzy's going to contribute right away and that'll be exciting, but it'll also bring pressure to be a college golfer in a Division I program as a freshman. It would help to have, you know, two people who kind of know something about tournament pressure there, you know, to,
yeah,
you know, at least lean on. And, so there'll be some other, you know, things going on next year, you know, for the Stricker family. But, you know, as Steve and Nikki always say, all good things, right? All good. That's all a word they use quite a bit. All good, right?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Steve, I'm sure when he was 35 years old, never dreamed he'd be as busy as he is right now between, you know, doing a little bit of course architecture out at TPC Wisconsin, between hosting his own tournament, playing and winning in his own tournament, his Champions Tour schedule, and following his daughters. They've got a lot on their plates, but like you said, all good stuff.
And as we also look ahead to 2024, I want to give this opportunity to shout out to Mick Smith, the teaching professional out of the Milwaukee area. Was in contention most of last weekend at the Senior PGA Professionals Championship down in Port St. Lucie, Florida. Ultimately, finished in the top 10, but I think it was T7 at 2 under 285. Good enough to get into the Senior PGA Championship next year. That's the one that Steve Stricker won this year down in Frisco, Texas. Next year, it'll be at the course in Benton Harbor, Michigan, I believe Harbor Shores. And yep. He'll be part of that Corebridge Financial PGA team. And 35 club professionals over the age of 50 will compete against the regulars of the PGA Tour Champions. Brad Lanning of Hortonville lost in a playoff and is the first alternate out of the club pro group into that Senior PGA. So a pretty good showing there. Former legend at Bristlecone Pines head pro Sean English finished T59. He's now out in the Maryland section. And Middleton native Derek Stendahl, who now is up in Minnesota, finished T62. So a good showing there. Gary D'Amato, I don't want to tease too far into the distance, but privately behind the scenes here at Wisconsin.golf, you've promised a holiday shopping guide coming up. And I know you're busily squirreling away that those items. Are you accepting options for this list that you're compiling?
Absolutely. If you have any ideas or if you want to send me some stuff, Rob, I'm definitely open to that. But ideas are welcome. I've got 8 or 10 things already, products that I'm looking at, including in the guide, which will run sometime around Thanksgiving. So that'll be fun. I can't wait to sink my teeth into that one.
Well, we've found with all of our great sponsors here, Talking.Golf, including Old Fashioned Golf, that there's a lot of great things being made for golfers in Wisconsin by people in Wisconsin. And I'm sure some of those will be on the list, but I got a email blast today from PGA Tour Superstore. I didn't realize that you have one now.
Ooh. Yeah. Yes.
So,
well, there used to be one in the airport. I don't know if it's still there anymore or have they opened one somewhere else?
Well, they apparently, let me see where this is. I didn't know.
Oh, yeah.
It's on Blue Mound Road.
Blue Mound Road.
Is it something that used to be something else maybe?
Yeah. It was another store at some point. And I know where it is now. It's just down the road actually from, where the Golf Galaxy is on Blue Mound there. So they're, I think, just a few blocks apart. So if you're on Blue Mound Road, Rob, and you're itching for golf equipment, there's a couple good options there for sure.
Yeah, and I'm sure that some of the stuff will be on Gary's list might be able to be found there. But again, I've enjoyed doing my shopping online, and I know you can shop online at Old Fashioned Golf because they ship it right to your house. And I've gotten shoes at different places, and it's getting a little bit too easy to get your golf equipment to come to you, because that way, Gary, you can spend more time on the golf course.
Absolutely. Where else would we want to be, right, Rob?
Absolutely. Well, Gary, we will look forward to that, and hope that people, if they have some ideas, things that you're seeing out there that maybe we haven't, especially stuff as it relates to Wisconsin that might be cool under somebody's Christmas tree or in their stocking. Gary's email address is on every story he writes, so reach out to him, shoot him some ideas, and he can add it to the list. And there's no limit to what we can put into a holiday gift guide here at Wisconsin.golf. Gary, appreciate the time this week, and we'll touch base again here next week.
Okay, Rob, thank you.
All right, for Gary D'Amato, this is Rob Hernandez. Talking.golf is sponsored by Old Fashioned Golf. Our friends at Old Fashioned Golf are creating Wisconsin-inspired golf apparel right in Green Bay, Wisconsin. All of their gear is extremely comfortable with one-of-a-kind designs that allow you to show your love for this great state both on and off the golf course. And if you're starting your Christmas list, start it now by going to oldfashionedgolf.com. Gary and I have all sorts of goodies from Old Fashioned Golf, from pullovers to polos, from ball markers to head covers, and you can see all sorts of cool stuff at Old Fashioned Golf. Don't forget their license plate logo. They take all the pieces of the Wisconsin license plate and kind of mix and match it into a nice horizontal theme, especially the golf cap. The golf cap is something that ought to be under every Christmas tree for any golfer from Wisconsin. You can check it out at oldfashionedgolf.com. For Gary, I'm Rob. We'll talk golf again next week.